This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At 11:30 in 27 minutes, Barry Sperluga of the Washington Post. You just heard Byron say that Steven Strasburg will be meeting with the Yankees. Chris Russell reported yesterday he met with the Dodgers already. There's a very real possibility he leaves, and it's way more likely than not that Anthony Rendon leaves. So we got to start thinking about the potential that both Rendon and Stras walk out and the Nats take a step back this year. Are we ready for that potential reality? Talk to Sperluga about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. Before we get into changing some playoff seating or whether or not we need to in the NFL, with the Cowboys at 6-6, hosting the 10-2 San Francisco 49ers in a playoff game if the season ended today. Let's wrap up the calls really quickly on what is a pretty fascinating story out of the NFL. If you're just jumping in the car or just getting out of the office to go to a meeting or something, Josh Shaw violated the NFL's gambling policy. He's a cornerback with the Arizona Cardinals. He was signed by the team in March. He has never played for them. He got hurt in August. He's been on injured reserve. I'm imagining he has access to still all their meetings and buildings and film and all those things. He was in Vegas in the middle of November, and on Sunday, November 10th, during NFL games, walked into Caesars Sportsbook and made a bet on a three-team parlay, including the Cardinals and the Bucks, the team that he plays for. He bet on the second halves of those three Week 10 games. He bet against the Cardinals. They actually ended up costing him his parlay because he was wrong. They outscored the Bucks. He took Tampa Bay to cover -1 in the second half. The point, though, is he's been suspended for the rest of this year and all of next year by the NFL, and they're not sure yet if that's kind of the end of the road with him or if when he sits down and meets with Roger Goodell and company again, if they're going to do something different. The league didn't find any evidence of insider information, and because it was a parlay, I think, it speaks to the fact maybe that it wasn't specific to any information he may have had on the Cardinals-Bucks game. It was just him making a few football bets. But this is the infancy and the beginning stages. The league's going to have a team in Vegas next year. NFL gambling is huge already. Football betting, sports betting is exploding. Yep. It's an industry right now, maybe other than esports, in terms of sporting, that is probably number one.
Because it's gone from the fringes. It's gone from, again, you got to know a guy who knows a guy who gets you in, and you're texting updates and it involves some guy named Rocco, and next thing you know, you're $500 in the hole. You don't know what to do. This is now mainstream. It's like state sanction, and people are climbing all over themselves to get the money into their states to make it legal.
Because of that, you know the league's going to throw the book or a couple of books at this guy because they want to make an example of him, because even though it looks like it's tiny, tiny potatoes, they don't want any tolerance here. They want a policy in place where every player knows they can't do this. Couple of tweets coming in at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. Jesse says, I think there are hundreds of players betting through bookies or relatives, friends as proxy. Much ado about nothing. Just one guy making a stupid mistake. It's a pretty big allegation. Look, I think you'd be naive to think that no NFL player has bet on games.
Right.
They're huge football fans and sports fans. I'd like to think they don't bet on their own games. But that might even be naive to think that through other people. What I would say is, if that's the case, okay, we'll set that aside. I'll worry about that. But in the meantime, a guy that just walked into a casino and did this needs to be handled and dealt with accordingly.
And I think he should be punished, for the record. People are, because I said it's a 1 on a 1 to 10 scale of how severe I think this actual incident was, but he violated the rule. You don't want to have a precedent, and I'm with you. Let's throw the book at him. To me, suspend him for the rest of this season. That would end up being, what, I guess it's like 4 games. Or you know, sort of, you can backload it so you're not getting paid for once we found out you did this for the rest of the year. However you want to do that. But you're basically saying for this guy, because of the kind of roster player he is, you're never playing in this league again. You'll be in your mid-20s, not having played for a year and a half, and you were barely hanging on as it was. Nobody's going to trust you now. Just sort of can't wait to give Josh Shaw a shot.
But if you're just kind of trying to ruin his career anyway, why hide behind that? I mean, 800-636-1067 is the number. I think it's a way bigger deal than Danny does. Where are you guys at on this? Julian on Twitter says, are friends and family of players allowed to wager? Yeah, how do you legislate that? I mean, of course they are.
That's what's hard, man.
That's what people are worried about as this becomes a bigger and bigger, more prevalent thing is, of course. You know, if you are related, if I was actually Logan Paulson's cousin, let's say, if Logan Paulson, who's unrelated to me, wanted to give me a bunch of thoughts on Wednesday or Thursday about the game, or let's say he goes, dude, we're going to play Haskins this weekend because Case Keenum's foot's not right, and he has no chance against the Giants. He's going to be throwing picks all over the place. And then I go and I go, all right, how about I put $20,000 down? And I give 10 to you and 10 to me. That's what everyone's worried about.
Right.
And that's why something like this is going to be viewed as scary. Kyle in Fairfax, how are you?
Doing great, guys. I think this is a huge deal. And let's say this was Rob Gronkowski, who's retired right now, and he bet on a Patriots game. This is all that people would be talking about, even though he's quote-unquote not in the NFL, right? There's potential inside sources. He shouldn't be doing that. So I'm going to view this from the NFL's perspective and how I think they should have handled this. I would have exiled the guy. I would never let him play again. It's unfortunate, but I think by not exiling him, they've set a precedent right now as it stands that, one, you're getting a second chance for something that you should completely remove from your game. Number two, I think if you're Roger Goodell, you just realize the potential of the catastrophe that this could be based on the example I gave you, and legislation really needs to be set in place for players, coaches, something along the lines of if you've ever even been on a roster or coached a team, even if you move to media, you need like 2 years out of the game before you can ever put money down, you know, something like that. But I mean, if you think about what I just said, if this was Gronk and it was the Patriots, this was all people would be talking about for weeks.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I think that's really, really smart, and I completely agree. If this was a big-name former player with ties to the locker room, how would you feel about it? I think people would be really upset.
Well, here's what I hear, though, where you go, well, he jaywalked. That's a crime. You got to ban him for life. You got to put him in jail for the rest of his life. It's a crime. I think you have to look at the incident itself. Right? This to me is way more boneheaded mistake than it is nefarious thing. If you've got an insider trading situation, yeah, let's react accordingly. If you've got Rob Gronkowski or you had Tony Romo that season
he
was
with, from this to insider training is a very small
path. It's a small path.
A trading rather.
It is. But this to me reeks way more of stupid mistake. Now, I could be proven wrong if data comes out that he's using insider
trading. I don't even think most of us I won't speak for anybody else. I'm not saying this was insider trading. I'm just saying that this is close enough to it for a league that is about to be involved in millions, I don't even know, billions of dollars in this industry, that they got to make sure that this is not a thing.
Right.
And I think the Gronk example is a good one. Nate in D.C., what's up?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? Happy holidays.
Thank you.
You too, buddy.
All right. Grant, you are right on point with it. I mean, Danny, I get it. We're a little bit older, but the optics of it, you're basically going to have to kill the monster while it's a baby before it gets bigger. And just him doing this, A, was dumb.
Yep.
B, it opens the doors up to do so many more different things besides doing a parlay bet. Because then you have other ways that they can do things. And, yeah, you know, they could do prop bets. It could be anything. So, yeah, I don't even – honestly, I'd ban them for life.
Wow. Mm. See, I stopped short of that. But what they have not said they're not going to, Nate, in fairness. And thanks for the call, buddy. They said, the first thing I heard was he's suspended for the rest of the season. Then, I don't know if there was a hearing or they dug more or what have you. They came back and said there's no sign that he used any insider nuggets, but he will not play at all next season. My understanding, like most of these suspensions, is he still has to sit down, I'm sure, and be reinstated at the end of that. So they could then say, if they find something else out, or even if they just have the information that they do, you're not playing at that point. My guess is come 2021, they'll reinstate him. But he was such a fringe player that it probably won't really affect anything anyway. He's probably cooked, I would guess. Drew in D.C., how are you?
Hey, what's going on, man? Happy holidays, fellas.
You too, buddy.
You too, sir.
I just say, you know, the NFL is such hypocrites because they create these monsters. You know, if they can't tame them and keep eyes, you know, eyes from the sky, you know, then they want to penalize them. Not saying what he did was right. You know, what he did was stupid. But it's always going to be the ways to get around it. You know, you got people you can parlay money to that can get these bets in, which you should have did, you know, if you wanted to gamble. But, you know, the NFL created this monster, man, you know. So I don't think they need to ban them. I think they, you know, probably send them out for the year, let them come back, and just reshape the rules for all the guys, you know, reinforce it a little bit more. Thanks a lot, fellas.
Thanks, Drew, buddy. I just don't think you can allow anything that suggests questioning the integrity of a billion-dollar entity.
Yeah.
To be accepted, you know, and to just have slapped him on the wrist with a few games at the end of this year, to me, wouldn't have been good enough.
So what I would do is, for whatever the date was that he did this, I would say you were suspended for the rest of the year. So now that we found out about it now, but your suspension is retroactive to that moment. So you don't get paid, you don't get anything else, you get no benefits. You are persona non grata for a while.
And from November 10th.
Yeah, even if it bleeds into next year, I'm fine with that. It just, this seems to me, I understand, and this is why
you don't seem to agree with the idea of how slippery this slope is.
No, I
with
do.
The rest of us.
I get it, but I also say that this is like the gateway drug argument. I understand this is a significant thing because it's a mistake, and I know where they don't want it to go. This to me is just a bonehead. This is like, to me, I can't treat a bonehead like I treat a master criminal.
I get it. I'm not competent to the gateway drug argument because I think what he did was more wrong than you do anyway. Like, in other words, right. The gateway drug thing is, we're saying it's marijuana. Who cares? To me, this is not a who cares. He's on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was, but he could. I keep saying this. He could have been in the building on Thursday and Friday, sitting in on all their meetings, everything they're doing, and then flown out to Vegas on Sunday and told all his boys, hey, here's what we got. Jameis is going to pick this apart. We got two corners out. Now, it's a parlay, so I don't think he was just trying to get rich off knowing what he knew about his organization.
Right.
But all of those things were very much plausible and reasonable and could have happened. That's just a practical situation I'm designing.
If they did, let's have a conversation. Then let's forever. There's no question in my mind that
Grant
that's what
Danny
I would do.
On the Fan at 11:30, Barry's Ferluga, who covers the Nats. We've got some news this morning on Anthony Rendon, who's meeting with a couple of teams, and Steven Strasburg. Ominous couple of days leading up to this one for the Nationals on the free agency front.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. We'll get into Around the NFL in a second. I do real quick have to talk about the Georgetown Hoyas.
Buddy.
You know I'm Georgetown Hoyas Paulson.
Yeah.
What with me having married into season tickets and being at way too many of those games at Capital One Arena. Way too many. Now, I don't go to all of them, luckily. This is the one sporting event where I go, hey, I'll watch the baby. I'll stay home and watch the baby and watch the game on
you
TV.
Why don't you guys go?
You go with your brother.
Why don't you guys
It'll
go?
Be fun. Now, I actually do really enjoy going when I go because I ate a chicken tender basket and there's no one around me and it's super fun. College Basketball Live is pretty good. But Georgetown is in trouble. They are 4-3 this year on the floor. Bad. Two of their top four scorers and two of their top five or so players are no longer on the team for the rest of this season. I haven't really heard what happened with their point guard, James Akinjo, who, if you don't know who he is, don't worry about it, but just know he's outstanding.
Good player.
He's awesome. In fact, Damian Lillard, last month at one point, randomly tweeted about how he's his favorite point guard in college basketball, and he's so tough. But he's not with the team. Now, he wasn't listed in a big story that came out last night that three of the Georgetown players are apparently being talked to and investigated about allegations on campus.
That don't sound very good, but they're allegations
not.
At this point. That's all we know.
And I'm not even going to get into the specifics. I don't have enough information.
Mm-hmm.
But just know that Akinjo is out, and so is another really good player who's listed in that report. Akinjo is not. But the point is, two of their top players are gone for the rest of the season. Just see you later. No real information. They're 4-3. Patrick Ewing has now been around for 3 years. They're not getting any better. I'm sure you should yell at me when I say don't hire Patrick Ewing. Hire a qualified professional who's been a college basketball coach before. Please stop letting John Thompson run your program years after he was your head coach. It's just not getting better for them. This was such a proud program. This was one of the great powerhouses in college basketball. They have so many things going for them, and now they're basically a 500-ish team over a few years that doesn't make the tournament.
The idea that they should be a tournament team every year, I think, is still in the minds of Georgetown Hoya fans.
Well, I think they should be.
And they, I don't know that anymore, honestly.
They're not, but I genuinely believe that
they should be that good.
Absolutely. In the Big East, you're saying make the field? That's all you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes, easily. Top 60 whatever in the country? Are you kidding me?
Well, I don't know anymore.
Getting to the Sweet 16, maybe not. But that team in D.C., with their brand, with the ability they have to recruit, every year they get another kid from St. John's, another kid from Dunbar, wherever it is they're recruiting.
But I guess the point I'm making is I don't know that they have the same brand that they did with my age group.
They don't, because they keep making terrible decisions.
Well, yeah. I mean, growing up, that was the biggest deal. I'm telling you. Whether it was Allen Iverson, whether it was Ewing, whether it was Olajuwon, it was Alonzo Mourning and Mutombo. It was Georgetown basketball was everything in D.C. And that's kind of gone by the wayside. I think you got a couple generations of people that it's just another program. I don't know that they have that blue blood status anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the right guy, without the pall of Big John kind of hanging over the program.
I think if you spend a little time like around the building when they play, like there still is an aura there.
There's still a
there.
Buzz.
There's something, there's a there. But when you only kind of make decisions based on appeasing, like it's basically like a king in England or something. It's like a family-run operation.
It's like a godfather kind of thing.
But you're not allowed to say it.
Right.
Like I'm not involved in any way, so but if I would be like knocked off at like the bowling alley tomorrow if I was like a Georgetown person for saying this. Because I'm on the outside looking in, like I what did you say about Big John? Like I literally you're like Grant's gone. He said something about John Thompson.
Now, here's what always has to be said. Same thing with Gary Williams too, by the way. Those two guys are legends. What they did for these programs should never be forgotten.
Right.
They deserve their legendary status. John Thompson III is one of the most important basketball coaches ever. That's not hyperbolic either. Getting the job that he did, bringing that program to where it got to, how they were one of the blue bloods, one of the great jobs in college basketball. He deserves everyone's reverence and respect. Period. The next phase is he needs to be removed as kind of the behind-the-scenes owner and operator of pulling the levers.
Sitting
with the program.
Right behind the bench and like whispering during timeouts.
That should not be a thing anymore. And again, it doesn't mean that he didn't do the wonderful things that he did.
Well, what I didn't get, and now this is just becoming a Georgetown segment, so a lot of people might be bored by this, but here we are. Two things. Number one, when they hired Patrick Ewing and everyone screamed because I didn't think it was a good hire. The first thing I didn't get was this idea that like Patrick Ewing is a huge draw for a 17-year-old now. They don't remember him playing.
Yeah, he's a draw for me because I'm going, oh my God, Patrick Ewing.
If he's recruiting you or me, really cool.
Really
Patrick
helpful.
Ewing's in my living room. You know who he's a draw for? The parents. There was actually a story that came out this year where like he's like, yeah, I'm the favorite player of every mom and dad in the living room I'm in, but the players don't really relate to me that well. Or I'm paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
Yeah,
they've never seen you play. You know who they think is awesome? Like LeBron's old to them. They've grown up watching Zach LaVine. You know that's who's great to them.
Yeah, Luka Doncic is a veteran to them.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
But I mean, it didn't work with Chris Mullin at St. John's. Now I think Ewing is actually more of a worker than Mullin was. Mullin just kind of never was into that job. He just sort of, you know, just was there and just decided to just kind of collect paychecks and not really do it. It sounds like Ewing is working at it, and their staff is working
grinding.
At it. I don't, but I don't think that's enough, frankly.
I just don't get your, and as you said, that they are closing in on this not being relevant anymore, but you are Georgetown. I refuse to believe if you just opened up your search to people that were everyone that's qualified and is a really good college basketball coach, that you couldn't get a great college basketball coach to come there who's had a ton of success to run your program in the freaking Big East. I refuse to believe you couldn't do that. Instead, you hired a guy who had never coached before at any level. He was a legend with the program. I just think, generally speaking, like let's make Daryl Green the cornerbacks coach, and let's make Brian Mitchell the kick returner coach, and let's make name my other favorite Redskins of the past. Ryan Kerrigan can retire and coach outside linebackers, and we'll put Will Compton at inside linebackers coach. Stop doing that.
Yeah.
Do they have coaching experience? Are they good coaches? Have they been elsewhere before?
Sometimes it can work. Like Juwan Howard apparently is a rave hit at Michigan. Those guys are beating everybody. But it's early sample size, so we'll see what happens.
Let's see.
He inherited a pretty good team that's, you know, a pretty good program. But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I'm with you. To me, the thing, and this is what we said at the time, and we were vilified. People said terrible things about us, and that's fine. The overarching theme is the fact that you have to get the blessing of Big John is what holds this thing back, right? I need him.
They're laughing about how much you're saying Big John.
I'm oversaying Big John. I don't, because I can't remember if it's two
just
or three
John
or whatever.
Thompson. John Thompson. Just say John Thompson.
The fact that you have to get his blessing. I'm kind of doing it Big John style, tongue in cheek, because I have people oversay that. But you have to, the fact that he's still involved in any way is what really is the problem.
Agreed.
And it doesn't mean that he wasn't a legend. Or
when,
not a legend.
When they had a coaching search, because this is not meant to be disrespectful. I've met JT3. He's on with the Junkies a bunch when he was coaching. Really, really, really good dude when I've interacted with him. And
super
I
nice
think,
guy.
Good basketball coach, by the way. I don't think he's a bad basketball coach. But he had several more years, in my opinion, than he should have had at Georgetown. Why did he have several more years? That's a bit.
It's a good bit.
The reason is because his last name was Thompson.
Yeah.
So then they said, okay, we'll move on from John Thompson III. And I thought, wow, this is big. Georgetown's got a shot. Let's make Capital One Arena fun again. Let's do this. What did they do? They immediately hired one of the former legends who's really close with John Thompson.
A guy that John basically calls like his foster son, you know, like
right.
His second son.
His son God's that he son. Doesn't actually isn't yeah. actually related to. That's where we're at here. Grant and Danny on the fan. Berries for Luga of the Washington Post to talk Nats. Updates on Rendon and Strasburg next. Last night's red carpet premiere in the documentary of the 2019 World Series was a lot of fun. We got to take part in it, and thousands of Nats fans were on hand. But we turned the page today to the offseason and to the fact that Steven Strasburg's meeting with teams, and so is Anthony Rendon, and we might have to prepare ourselves for the very real possibility that both are out at the start of this season. Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post joins us. Let's start with Rendon. Buster Olney has talked to folks. He says Rendon's likely going to be the first of the stars to get a deal in place. What have you heard? What do you know about Rendon's sweepstakes right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that Buster's reporting that about the timing, because typically Scott Boras's clients wait and wait and wait. We can go to Bryce Harper last year, signing well after spring training started, as a pretty prominent example. I think what that tells you is something we've kind of known about this all along. Anthony Rendon is driving this train, and Scott Boras works for Anthony Rendon, and he's made that very, very clear. I would say a couple things. We've probably touched on some of these before. The Nats offer in September to Rendon, their most recent offer that I know of, 7 years between $210 and $215 million in that range, included deferrals. We've talked to death about deferrals and the learners and the Nats baking them into almost all or all of their long-term contract offers. This was not a Bryce Harper situation where the deferrals went out to, you know, pay the player when he's in his 50s and 60s. This was essentially the terms of the Max Scherzer deal, where it's a 7-year contract and then you're paid 7 years beyond that. So much more reasonable in structure. Anthony Rendon, however, is not into deferrals basically at all. He is of the mind, I've been told, that it's his money. He's earning it. Why should the team be allowed to invest that money when he could take it and invest it in real time himself? So that may be a biggest sticking point, not the money, not the years, but really the structure of the contract between the Nats and Rendon. That is not at all saying that they can't circle back. It doesn't mean that if he meets with another team, the Nats are out of it. It just means that the last offer didn't make him jump right at the moment.
So, and Barry, that's what I wanted to follow up on. I remember last year we kind of did this with a major superstar leaving town. They made their offer, and there didn't seem to be much negotiation there. It was like, this is our offer, and I guess Harper and Boras kind of went, wait, really? Anything else? And then the answer was no. Do you think they might revisit? Might they up their offer, kind of recognizing this is a unique case here, given, you know, you're going to lose a second consecutive position player superstar that just helped deliver something major to this city?
I don't think it's over by any means, Danny. I would just revisit on the Harper thing. They did have a meeting the week before Christmas in Palm Springs with the Learners, and the Nationals came back with an offer at that time that was actually less than their first offer, which I think is an indication that they ultimately didn't really want the player back. I think that the Rendon thing could be more of a conversation. From the national standpoint, he's a huge piece of what they do and what they did. It would be a homegrown player, position player, extended his time here. They haven't had that since Ryan Zimmerman signed two extensions. And it's hard to imagine the lineup being anywhere near as potent without his bat in the middle of it. I think, in a way, Anthony Rendon is more important to the Nats, certainly for the next 3 years, than the Nats are important to Anthony Rendon. Not that he's a mercenary, but I don't think his heartstrings are completely tugged back to D.C.
Barry, I planned on eviscerating them every day after he signed somewhere else for a while, and now that they've won a World Series, newsflash, I'm not going to do that. So they're going to get bailed out by that a little bit, but kind of correct whatever you want to here. I was perfectly fine letting Bryce walk. In fact, I wanted to do that based on the money. If not now, when? When do you break the bank? When do you break glass? You're not the Oakland A's. I know the Nats say they're not the Dodgers or the Yankees, and the TV deal's a problem, and the attendance is a problem. You just made hundreds of millions of dollars this postseason. You won a World Series because of this guy. He's an outstanding player. If not now, when? And if I'm a Nationals fan, at what point do I say, well, Juan Soto's gone next? Why am I falling in love with these guys for 5 or 6 years as rentals? I'm basically the Oakland A's.
So there's a lot to chew on there, right? So, one, I would walk back that you just made hundreds of millions of dollars on the World Series. I've tried to do some reporting on what it means to a franchise to financially to win a World Series. I don't have it nailed down. I have not heard anybody who thinks it's hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, there's some kind of ancillary stuff that you can't put a number on. Now you're a World Series champion. You've got some legitimacy that has to mean something financially that's beyond the sweatshirt sold and the tickets sold. But I don't think they're suddenly $200 million richer because they won Game 7 against the Astros. The other questions about, are you going to be able to keep these players that we have grown to love and we have become the backbone of a World Series champion? I agree with you. I think that the fan base, by and large, was fine with letting Bryce Harper go, but they also assumed on the back end of that it would mean that that's because they're getting Anthony Rendon to stay. And if that doesn't happen, you do get to a point where you're asking the exact questions you're asking, Grant. When are we going to tie somebody up? Is it going to be Soto? Well, Soto's represented by Scott Boras. Extensions before free agency are rare with him. Obviously, Steven Strasburg did one. Are you going to do it with Trey Turner? Is Carter Kieboom, are you going to get aggressive with him and do a deal, after his rookie year that extends him here? I'm just throwing spitballing names that, Robles would fall into that category that you might be able to do that with. Don't forget they did extend Strasburg midstream. He would have been a free agent prior to. Obviously, it has the opt-out that is affecting this this offseason. Yes, you ask those questions as a fan. When are we going to keep our own guys?
Our buddy Barry Svalugo with us, another minute or two with him. You mentioned Strasburg. What about him? I think we're not really ready for the real possibility he might sign somewhere else. He's getting flirted with an awful lot by some of the Blue Bloods.
Well, I think if you expected that there was a world that Steven Strasburg was going to enter free agency and he wouldn't get flirted with, I think you weren't realizing what the opt-out meant. I think Strasburg's camp feels like the extension that they signed midstream, 7 years, $175 million, gave the Nationals a premier pitcher at a discount. And that's how these extensions work before you hit free agency, that the club gives up something and the player gives up something. And now he's trying to get his real market value. The trick with him is, and what we're all speculating about is, we know he likes comfort. We know he's comfortable here. We know he's moved his family here. He lives here year round now. How valuable is that to him? And how much more are the Nats willing to add in years and dollars onto the 4 years at $100 million he had left on his deal? There's probably, I think the Nats will always get the last word here. They will be able to respond to any offer that whoever, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Angels, whoever might be after Strasburg. But you're right, Danny, it's no sure thing that he's back here. I still go into this entire process saying I expect Strasburg to be a Nat and I expect Rendon somewhere else. But it's guessing right now. It's December 3rd and this could be a long process.
Barry, looking forward to your research, your journalism, your writing all off-season long on these Nats. Appreciate you, buddy, as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. There's Barry Sfarluga of the Washington Post on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. The Double Play is next, and the Beltway Blitz at noon on the Redskins and the Capitals, who are back in action out west tonight. You're locked into G&D.
Because I got a bye week, and I got to figure out, for playoff matchup purposes,
porpoises.
Best defense.
It's a porpoise.
Yeah.
Which defenses?
Buffalo against Pittsburgh.
Love that.
Giants against Miami.
Don't
Cleveland against Arizona.
That's not even close. It's Buffalo.
Buffalo against
Buffalo, Pittsburgh, slam dunk. Best of the three defenses, unequivocally, and they're playing against a fourth-string quarterback in Devlin Hodges.
I need to hear more about old Duck Hodges. I need to hear more about him.
His name is Devlin, correct? Everyone calls him Delvin. Would that annoy you if people said Delvin when your name's Devlin? Or am I botching that?
I don't know what his name is, honestly. I've only heard Duck. Well, I'm not trying to do a bit.
It's spelled like Devlin, I believe. D-E-V-L-I-N. And everyone calls him Delvin or Duck.
I just want the whole thing to go away. I just want Roethlisberger to come back.
I'd be good on that.
You know what I mean? I need that.
Give me Ben Roethlisberger back. You never thought you'd say that, did you?
No, I didn't.
It is time for our Double Play. What is going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Mine's twofold. It's a twofer. This Friday evening, Leesburg, Virginia, at the Tally Ho Theater. Chad just did his Chad Duke's Veterans Day Jamboree there. I performed stand-up there in the past. It is an awesome venue. They got great food. It's a cool part of Leesburg. Old-timey theater that they renovated. It is a blast. Come hang out with your pal, tallyhotheater.com. A couple funny younger comics will be on the show as well, hosting, featuring, et cetera. Excited to work with these guys, Matt Deakins and Dom Gray. Really, really going to be fun. Tonight, tickets are cheap. Go to tallyhotheater.com. Second thing I want to do is, I didn't get to do this Monday because I, frankly, was late and awkward to the show, and I'm embarrassed about that, but let's move on. I need to give a quick, heartfelt, and genuine thank you to the folks at Georgetown Hospital, at Georgetown MedStar Hospital. Most specifically, the folks on the sixth floor of the main building.
Are they listeners?
They are now. They said okay. They were going to check it out when Jeff, who's in charge of the team, kind of the guy in charge of the floor, is folks on the staff, Tech, Esther, and Maddie, and everybody. They were so kind, so patient, and so wonderful. I've spent way too much time in hospitals over the last several years because of a bunch of things that have happened, not just to me, but in my life, honestly, with relatives and friends and loved ones. Here's what happens most of the time. There's no information. Everybody's just stopping by because it's the next stop on their route. I don't blame anybody for this. I understand it can be really challenging. Every time you walk into a room, it's somebody's tragedy or it's somebody's pain or whatever. And you have to steel yourself from that sometimes. I get that. But it always felt like, I'm just here to do your blood pressure. The next person, I'm just here to give you an intravenous shot so you have blood thinners. I'm just here to give you the next thing, the next thing, next thing. And there's very little interpersonal feeling to it. What happened for me is very minor. I had a stupid thing that happened. I slipped and fell, hurt my rib. Not a big deal. People in neighboring rooms are dealing with way more serious stuff. Okay,
it's always uncomfortable, by the way, when you're in the hospital or like urgent care, whatever it is, for something very minute, minor, even if it's a legitimate thing you need operated on. Like I had to get my appendix out randomly a couple years ago. So I like army crawl through the parking lot to get in there. My stomach's hurting. I have no idea what's going on. They go, oh, you need your appendix taken out. Okay. The person next to me, I still remember this, and I wonder all the time, like, what happened? Couldn't get breath. Like, it was an older person, but they were, like, breathing in as much. They're like, take a deep breath. And they couldn't get the oxygen they needed. They were just taking huge breaths and not getting oxygen. And I just remember hearing that, thinking, this person's going to die.
Yeah,
and I'm sitting here mad because I needed my appendix out.
I'm in the ER because I sneezed, and the guy next to me couldn't stop vomiting. And it sounded like a dinosaur talking to another dinosaur in their own language. Someone to my left probably could never open their eye again. You know, it's like my thing is small potatoes and small fries. I'm not sitting here.
But you sneezed, in fairness.
Yeah, I sneezed. All right, so that's the same. But when they finally transferred me out of the ER and into the kind of the regular facility to be taken care of, you know, basically under observation to make sure that my lung was okay, speaking of breathing, and everything was fine. They treated me like my thing was a big deal too. And that honestly goes so far. They understand. I at least get this feeling. Jeff and his team understood that to me, this was a big deal. It's not a big deal to them because they see far worse. They're going to see far worse before, after, and whatever else. They were patient, answered every question, were very clear with what the expectation was in terms of what milestones I needed to reach to be able to get out of there. They followed up. Everything about the experience, despite aside from the fact, obviously, that I was injured and in pain and discomfort, was amazingly pleasant. And that sort of thing means so much. And so I want to say thank you to them for taking great care of me.
It is time for my double play. So I got really excited this morning because I saw there was a list out. You know, I'm a big fan of lists.
Your list pulse.
And this list was the top 10 most annoying Christmas songs via a poll in the United Kingdom. Cross the pond, as they say. Well, here's the problem with this list. I don't know most of these songs, so it kind of ruins my fun. But there are a couple here that I like, and there are a couple here that I do think stink in general. The number one most annoying Christmas song, according to a poll done in the UK, is All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey.
Now, I find that one annoying, and I'm sick of it, but I don't know if that's the most annoying.
Certainly not the most annoying. It's a fine song. Do I love it? No. I got to be in the right mood for it. Mm-hmm. This is the one. Well done, Tommy. This is I would say if I had to list it on some kind of scale, I would say great Christmas song, good Christmas song, nothingness, I feel no emotion, or bad Christmas song. This is a good Christmas song.
If you got a good binary?
Yeah, good category. Number one most annoying, according to them. Now, a couple I've never heard of, Do They Know It's Christmas by Band-Aid. I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, Wizard. Do you know these songs?
That one. I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day. The reason I know that one is via Kids Bop. I know that because of Kids Bop. It's on the mix that
so
my kids watch.
So maybe parents are annoyed by it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's possible. Here's one that's on this list that I don't agree with at all. Santa Claus Is Coming to Town by the Jackson 5. If the Jackson 5 sang something, I like it. Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, one of my favorite Christmas songs. So you know what I like? Jackson 5 performing Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. You get annoyed by that song at all?
A little bit.
Why?
It's hard to put my finger on it. I generally don't like the genre of...
This is the Band-Aid one right here. Punch it up. This song stinks for the most part.
Yeah, this is the one where a bunch of people did it. Band-Aid, Live Aid, that kind of thing.
Too slow?
Yeah.
For me?
I get annoyed at the musician, celebrity, great singer stops making their music and just re-records a Christmas thing for a money grab. I just, like, Carrie Underwood's like, Oh Silent Night, and it just stinks. I like a choir version. Give me, like, the real version of the Christmas song.
Song annoying? I love this one. This is one of my, this might be in my top 10 or so. Jackson 5 doing one of the great Christmas songs ever. They also have Jingle Bells on this list by the Andrews Sisters. I don't know which version of Jingle Bells that is. I'm good on never hearing Jingle Bells again.
I'm fine with
generally.
That.
But here's one that I think they hit a home run on. So the people of the United Kingdom, you botched this list up and down.
We've had bullshit, haven't we?
Tell me this song isn't the pits.
Is it a bit hurting?
Santa Baby.
Oh, it's quite nice, isn't it?
I hate Santa Baby.
That one stinks.
And everyone tries to, like, sexy it
up. Oh, they
up
make
a
it
bit.
Sexy. Don't do that.
Santa Baby.
Christmas is not sexy.
So awful. If I hear Santa Baby again, it would be an unnecessary endeavor.
But you know what I mean? I don't like the performing artist. Like, Ariana Grande needs to not just pause and what she's doing normally to, like,
this
sing some
Ariana
stupid Christmas
Grande
song.
Doing Santa Baby.
Is it really?
Yeah, you just
I didn't know that.
Me.
It's amazing.
Punch this one up for Danny.
Take me away. End this immediately.
I'm going to make it so sexy.
It sucks.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Now, I will say, Last Christmas awful. By Wham is awesome.
That's on the list.
Yeah, that's
number
on the
five.
List of annoying.
Yeah.
That song's great.
Number five most annoying song in the UK.
Mm.
So there's your list. Enjoy your Christmas music. But just know that in the UK, they like their Christmas songs a little differently than we do.
I suppose they do.
I'm surprised you didn't ride harder for the Jackson 5, dude.
But I don't love that one. I mean, I love the Jackson 5. I love Michael Jackson.
You like Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and you like them.
I like
it's like
fun.
Saying, I like chocolate, I like peanut butter, I don't like Reese's Cup.
Nah, but it's the Santa Claus is Coming to Town is just people yelling Santa Claus is Coming to Town 81 different times. Like Bruce Springsteen's got one, he's like, Santa Claus, Coming to Town. And he's like, oh, so much, Bruce. You know what I'm talking about, Tommy? The Bruce Springsteen version?
Tommy's like spinning the hits.
The E Street Man, like they're like the overplaying of the saxophone. He's like, let me tell you about him.
I think if I had a... I'd have to make the list. This would probably be my favorite Christmas song. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Reminds me of being 8, and I just got so jacked up that Santa was on his way.
Because it's fun.
It's so fun. It's back when you had a Christmas spirit.
Oh, yeah.
You don't anymore.
I don't.
People may know that about
you. It's about doing work.
The Beltway Blitz is next. We're covering the Redskins and the Capitals, 12-18. Dwayne Haskins looking a little bit better over the last week. He improved. Are you excited by his growth yet?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.